one way we can address those learning preferences. A great example from Michael Wesch out at Kansas State University. He takes the time to record himself reading out loud the articles that he assigns students. So that way, because of the busy schedules and the compressed time, they don't have to be at a computer to consume the materials for his course. So it's a universal design for learning strategy by providing things in multiple formats, but now they could be listening while they're commuting on a bus, they could be listening while they're washing the dishes at night, and still be moving forward with their academic tasks. And so starting for a compressed schedule especially, finding ways that we can provide multiple pathways for students to reach the goals.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hello, hello.
It's going to be a fun show today. This is part two with Todd Zakrajcik and Kevin Kelly. If you missed part one, please tune in on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, or Pandora. Thanks. Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Well, it's great to be here, Tiffany. Appreciate it. And Brad, always great to hear from you, too.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, I'm really happy to be here, and thanks so much for this opportunity, both of you.
Yeah, we're going to jump right in. We also have audience members who have been teaching online for years. Brad and I work for Indiana Wesleyan University's National and Global Campus with online instructors and students. And a question that has been posed by those online faculty who have been teaching for years when they heard about this book is they've been wrestling with how to create equity in compressed online courses. So we have courses that could be just 5 weeks in length. Do you have any practical strategies or ideas about how to create equity when that's the case?
First, let's operationally define equity for your listeners.
That's
in
great.
In the book, we use the working definition provided by the Peralta Community College District here in Oakland, California. And they use equity to mean freedom from biases, assumptions, mm-hmm. and institutional barriers that negatively impact students' motivation, opportunities, or achievements. With that in mind, if we can put ourselves in our students' shoes, or better yet, talk to our students, then we can identify those biases, assumptions, and barriers that we need to manage or help students manage. Mm-hmm. For example, we may assume that students understand the commitment to fitting the same amount of work in fewer weeks. In some cases, that may mean doing 16 weeks of work and, like you said, 5 weeks' time. Mm-hmm. So instead of double the mint in your double mint gum, it's going to be triple the work. Mm-hmm. And again, these students may be working a day job. They may be taking care of kids or family members who are ill. And so, we don't know if everybody, when they sign up for a course, may understand mm-hmm. that. So that's just one thing, is taking into consideration those first generation students or students who may not have read closely, or may assume if it's their first online course, students make an assumption that it's less work because mm-hmm. they don't have to go to a class. Mm-hmm. One assignment that I have my students do is to put in their calendar and prove it to me by taking a phone pic of their paper calendar or a screenshot of their digital calendar, that they have set aside the appropriate amount of time each week to work on our online class. Mm-hmm. Students put their face-to-face classes in their calendars, but they don't put their online classes in there.
Oh, it is true.
That's one strategy that we can use for a compressed course. It may mm-hmm. even be more important. And I mm-hmm. tell them it doesn't have to be the same exact time slot every week, especially if you have a changing job schedule or anything else. But you need to make sure that you're setting aside the right amount of time to engage with the course materials, to participate in the online activities. And I even tell them, don't just put the deadlines in your calendar, put the start dates so that you, if you're going to write an essay, you're going to create a draft, you're going to send it to a classmate for peer review, you're going to rewrite it, and then you're going to submit it for a grade. And so those are four different due dates now instead of one. And if we wait until, hey, Friday at midnight, you're going to be trying to do all four of those things in a short amount of time.
Yeah. And I love the fact that, Kevin, you just hit so many practical ideas. I think that's really, really important. The only thing I want to add to it is I think one of the ways that you really start to create equity in any kind of a classroom, especially in a compressed online course, is number one, recognize differences. You know, the old concept that the fish doesn't know that there's water. We have ways of approaching things for ourselves. And oftentimes we can teach a class and never realize that the students have different ways that they prefer to learn. And so recognizing that there are differences in the classroom, and as soon as you recognize there's differences, then you can start to think about whether or not there's equity within those differences or among the differences. But much like the fish and water example, again, if we don't realize there are differences, we don't realize there are inequities, then we don't even start with the how.
Absolutely.
And building on what Todd just said, one way we can address those learning preferences, a great example from Michael Wesch out at Kansas State University. He takes the time to record himself reading out loud the articles that he assigns students. So that way, because of the busy schedules and the compressed time, they don't have to be at a computer to consume the materials for his course. So it's a universal design for learning strategy by providing things in multiple formats, but now they could be listening while they're commuting on a bus, they could be listening while they're washing the dishes at night, and still be moving forward with their academic tasks. And so starting for a compressed schedule especially, finding ways that we can provide multiple pathways for students to reach the goals.
Excellent advice.
Yeah.
If I seem to be not paying attention over the last 30 or 45 seconds, it's not because I wasn't enthralled with what Kevin was saying, but I went online and ordered a copy of your book.
Hey.
Oh, no. Oh, so sorry, Brad. Did you get the discount code?
Hey, I need to get my copy, so I'll take the discount code. And I win.
I think it's ET. Is it Kevin? I think Kevin knows it.
ETS 30.
ETS 30. That's for the Excellent Teacher Series. ETS 304, 30%
and free
off.
Shipping.
Sorry, Brad.
So I paid $300 for this book, and I really didn't have to. Is that what you're telling me?
No. Hey, by the way, before we move on, audience members, always, whenever you look at a book or when you ever have somebody order a book for you, tell them the price point, because what I'm finding more and more are people will post books and list it for like awful numbers, like $200, $300. And they do that because if anybody happens to say, I really, really want this, they'll pay it.
Wow. So, yeah.
No, but anyway, sorry. But I'm glad the listeners can get the 30%.
And I was just, as you talked, the answered questions, discussed this, I was like, I got to read this book. You've got some great gems in here.
Excellent.
Looking forward to it.
There's some good stuff.
We call it the buffet.
And it's so needed. It is so needed. As we think about our situation, as Tiffany mentioned, we work on our national and global campus, and we work primarily with adult learners who come to higher ed with incredibly full plates as parents, employees, taking care of their own parents, all of those things, and then add higher ed on top of that. What are some ways that we might build equity for people who are adult learners who perhaps haven't been in school for 20 years and now they're coming back into this new world that's very different and adds a great number of demands on them?
I'll start us going, and then Todd, you can pick up if I don't cover the entire galaxy of ideas that we have in the book. But the so, for instance, many of us consider equity challenges related to technology. I've already talked about the Wi-Fi mm-hmm. challenges that almost a quarter of students reported in those student surveys about learning during COVID last year and this year. So access to technology, some students don't have a device. They're doing a lot of the coursework from their phones because they're sharing the one computer in their household with their family members who may need to work, may need to go to school, may need to do all those different things. For returning students, we also have to consider that they may want or need help and support in using the different learning tools. They may not be familiar with the learning management system. They may not be familiar with Zoom or other video conferencing tools. They may not be familiar with any virtual lab software that they may need. So making sure that in our instructions for activities, rather than just putting it in our syllabus, I always say you should put these things in your instructions as well, just in time help. And I like having the idea of just a little box. If you need help using this software, if you need help with this topic, here's an online tutorial on how to use perform this task. You could even just record yourself completing the assignment yourself, so and do what's called a talk aloud or think aloud, so that the students can see what they're supposed to do. So that's one. Another one, and then I'll be quiet so Todd can chime in, is, and Todd mentioned this, are the students seeing themselves in the media for your course? And so I've just been conducting focus groups with students in a community college system in a different state, and all of the returning students said that they don't see themselves in the marketing materials for their college and any pictures showing students at the college. And they even questioned, do they even want me there as an older student? And those older students bring so much to the plate, to the table, with their life experience, and can help younger students think about how the topics of the course apply to their lives. And so the instructors can partly address this by selecting images from different galleries that show students of all ages and ethnicities and identities and backgrounds, but also having conversations with students, and maybe in an online discussion or some other activity where they address maybe stereotype threat for older students, or the biases that other students may have about whether or not those students are overprepared or underprepared or whatever type of prepared they might be. So making it an active conversation so that you get it out there and help those students meet their own academic goals. I guess the last thing I would say is recognizing that they may set aside certain things and accept lower grades because they have so many other commitments. I was fortunate to be the moderator for a student panel, and we had a 35-year-old mother of two who had a full-time job and was just taking classes so she could increase her mobility financially. And so she said, you know what, some of these things I'm going to do the minimum amount of work because I have to prioritize where I'm going to use my time. And so having that empathy for our students, recognizing that they may not be completing certain activities, not because they don't want to, but just because they have other things that attract their attention.
Yeah, and I love two things specifically you said, Kevin. Is number one, the inclusion part. I hadn't thought about this until you were just saying this, but if I said to someone, so what do you do to help with inclusiveness in college classes? And forget for a moment the question we just asked. So imagine that's not been framed. Just what do you do to increase inclusion? If somebody says, oh, well, I've got this new module I'm doing for my older students, and I've got this other thing I'm doing, and you'd stop, I mean, stop cold, because when we think of inclusion, we usually think of ethnic backgrounds and different groups who are underrepresented. So I love the fact, Kevin, that you pointed that out. The other one that I want to mention quickly is I also really like the concept of getting to know what the students are after and what they need, and being careful how you do that. You can't, in an asynchronous class, ask everyone to raise their hand if they've had a certain experience, because the students who haven't been in the class for 20 years are so scared about what's going to happen, and so fearful of how they're going to be successful and also how they're going to be perceived. And so raising hands don't work. Some kind of an anonymous poll to find out, so we don't have to generalize about what somebody who's 50 years old
has or haven't done. I mean, I'd tell you real quickly, I was walking through the airport one time and there were two individuals talking to each other. First person said to the other one, have you, and this is the airport, have you texted her again? And the second person says, I've texted her like three times. She's going to miss the flight. Person says, why don't you call her? Oh, she hates it when I call. I'm just going to text again. Second person, no, just call. Nope, she hates that. Now, in your head, when you think about how old that conversation for the people involved, it was two women who were about 80 years old. And the reason that she, and first of all, it catches you off guard, right? You think of two younger people thinking, oh, they don't like to use the phone. Well, all of a sudden we're thinking for someone who is older, maybe they don't like to use the phone for other reasons. But that doesn't catch us sometimes. So again, thinking about who's in the class, but then what do they need? And so I like surveys that you can find out what they have experience in, don't have experience in, and then figure out what you can create some equity through that.
Excellent. Excellent advice.
Well, I can hear your enthusiasm as you talk about the book and offer these practical strategies and can tell how much you've, or at least a little of how much you've poured into the book. But what has been one of the most rewarding aspects of publishing together?
Working with Kevin.
Yeah, I believe it.
I beat you too.
You're right again, Todd.
Yay, thanks.
Oh, I would delight to work so with.
See, I say that way too much, but I would say it's opportunities like this to just have a chance to talk about issues that have been in existence pre-pandemic, but the pandemic amplified many of them. When it comes to equity, we had basic needs challenges. We had students who were juggling the different aspects of their lives and trying to fit in the academic portion so that they could change their upward mobility so financially and all that. But the conversations have been really rich.
Yeah.
I mean, Todd stole my line. Working with Todd's been a fantastic experience as well.
We did have a great time working on this book, so that was good. I think the other part for me that was really rewarding is taking some time to really think deeply about the topic. I mean, Kevin and I would have a lot of back and forth. Do you think this topic should be in there? Well, if we put this in there, we won't have room for this other thing. And then how do you think about this? And oops, we forgot the human dimension part. And Kevin would say, oh, and we can slide the equity in here. Just thinking deeply about a topic and not flitting from one thing to the next was really rewarding. Yeah.
It's apparent from just listening to the two of you that you share a common focus, and that is what's best for students. That's the primary value that you bring to the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And what I have to say is whenever I'm on campuses doing workshops, I'll say this too, is I believe everybody on this campus, now I have to be careful, the heavy research institutions are different, but if it's not a heavy research institution, everybody on this campus plays a role for one ultimate purpose, and that is to help educate the next generation of learners. The faculty members are trying to create these wonderful classroom experiences. Chairs are trying to make sure that the faculty have resources. Deans are making sure departments have resources. College presidents are making sure the whole campus has resources. All those people are doing this, but the groundskeepers are creating an aesthetically pleasing environment for students to sit under a tree and work. So if you've got a campus of people and all trying to create better opportunities for their students, I mean, how can that not win?
I have to apologize one more time. Earlier, I was distracted by ordering your book. I've actually just finished reading it, and I just want to say to anybody who's listening, it's awesome. It's fabulous. It's fabulous.
A quick read, as I understand.
Oh, my.
So,
Brad, the Ellen Woods, Evelyn Wood? I can't remember, in a speed reading
course. Yes.
Oh, the old folks listening are going to say, oh, that's so cool. And everybody Evelyn else will say,
What's he talking about?
I'm feeling that right now. Evelyn who?
Sorry, you didn't know, Tiffany. You can read books at like one page per second.
It's this a training?
As fast as you turn the page.
Yeah.
It was. You were trained to read. It was a speed reading course. And on the demos, they would actually show people like turning the pages slowly. But as they would turn them, you know, your eyes would go across and you could read a whole book. And so I'd read War and Peace. It's about Russia.
So our final question, and this will happen after the Pulitzer Prize, and you've collected that. What's next for the two of you?
Mm-hmm. Well, getting in more trouble together is one thing that I aspire to. Uh-huh. Brad, you mentioned our focus on students, and the class that I teach is actually called How to Learn with Your Mobile Device. So wow. The next book that I'd like to write is student focused. And I've done a lynda.com/LinkedIn learning course on the topic, but I'd love to turn it into a book to support lifelong learning, metacognition, helping students take charge of their own learning. And along the lines of this book, I'm working on a website that outlines the design for learning equity framework that we describe mm-hmm. in the book, and also looks at equity across an entire higher education institution. As Todd just brought up, it takes the entire institution to support student success. And so everybody from a librarian faculty to student services staff, they all can be thinking about how are we addressing the same equity challenges when students aren't in those courses, but they are interacting with the campus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds great, Kevin. And so for me, it's through Stylus, this excellent teacher series. The first book in the series was Dynamic Lecturing. Second book was Creating a Motivational Syllabus. This is the third book on advancing online teaching. So it turns out there's 7 more books. And when I pitched the idea to John to do a 10-book series, 10 books is a lot of books, it turns out. So I'm working on book 4 now, which is essentially helping faculty off to a great start, helping faculty with evidence-based strategies to launch into the higher education world in a little better way.
So it pains me to say this, but we might have to have Todd back and Kevin back.
Yeah, Brad, the only reason I'm doing this series is so I can come back.
I'm surprised he said he was only doing 10 books.
Yeah, that's it. Sorry, Brad, I cut you off.
I just want to say, you're one of the hardest working guys I know. I mean, you do lots of things. And it's just been such a pleasure to have the two of you here today. And to hear you singing from the same hymnal, as it were, mm-hmm. In terms of students are the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us. It's been fun and a great opportunity to tell more people about the book. Thanks.
Yeah. And I really appreciate it. And you two are, I mean, seriously, we joke around about a lot of things, but you're really good at what you're doing. So I appreciate being
here. Thank you. For all of our listeners, there have been so many resources that you've heard on the podcast episode today and in part 1. All of those resources and links are going to be made available to you on our website, digitaltolearn.com. And that's a numerical 2. Thanks everyone for listening. See you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are 3 things we ask you to do. 1, come back and join us again. 2, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.